Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. Today's daf has been dedicated in honor of Michelle and David Kamar and Merlene and Abe Esses, dedicated by their children Raymond and Monique Esses. Today's daf is being studied by Ilu Nishmat Acham Baruch, Rafael ben Miriam, and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are beginning today's daf on Kuf Yod Amud Sheni, and we start 5 lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah that there was a certain potion that is forbidden to take on Shabbat. That potion is called Kos Shel Ikrin. And the Gemara said that it is beneficial for Yarkona. Yarkona is jaundice. Gemara actually gave 3 different ingredients that this Kos Ikrin has. We said it's 1 measure of Alexandrian gum, and it's 1 measure of alum, and 1 measure of garden saffron. The Gemara said that if you take 2 out of 3 of these ingredients and mix it with shikhla, mix it with beer, then it cures jaundice. However, it does cause sterility. So the Gemara now says, Leyarkona, for jaundice, tren b'shikhla. Take 2 of those 3 ingredients, b'shikhla, with beer. The Gemara asks that the Mishnah said we can't do that on Shabbat because it's medicinal, implying that you can take this item during the week. Now what about the fact that it is going to cause a person to become sterile? Is that mutar? Is that permissible to allow oneself to become impotent? So the Gemara says, Umishare, is that permissible during the week even? How do we know that it's forbidden for a man to make himself impotent? So Gemara says, Tavud lomar, ub'atzechem lo ta'asu, lo ta'asu, bachem lo ta'asu. The entire pasuk reads, Uma'uch v'chatut, Venatuk vecharut lo takrivu laHashem. That's talking about different animals that have problems by their testicles. They're crushed and they're torn and they're ripped off. And then the Torah says, "Ubarzechem lo tasu." In your land, you should not do this item. Now, from the pasuk, they learn, the way that she learns it, lo ta'asu, in your land you should not do this, meaning you should not do this to the animal itself, you cannot do it. So that she learns from the word lo ta'asu, karibe lo ti'asu. Not only can't you actually do it, but you can't do something that'll cause it to happen. Ti'asu is it'll happen by itself. Now, how do we know that this is referring to human beings? Really, this is referring to animals. So that Tosfot comes along and says, it's from the actual word, ub'artzechem. Because, really, what does this have to do with the land? Seemingly, this is a law that applies anywhere, that you cannot castrate any animal. So why would the pasuk say ub'artzechem specifically in the land? It should be anywhere. So therefore, the Tosafot, and I quoted inside, Dibur HaMatir Tamud Lomar says, Mikem Kadarish. It's like ub'artzechem. So he learns it from the extra chem in the pasuk ub'aretz, as if to say that not only can you do it by animals, but mikem, you cannot do it to yourselves as well. And I read that inside. Mikem kadarish. Shalu et ben zoma ma'od esiruse kalba. Right, they asked the Gemara's question in Hagigah, are you allowed to castrate a dog? Amar de'u be'artzechem lo ta'asu. Tell the pasuk in your land you should not do it. Kol she'be'artzechem lo ta'asu. Which means anything in the land. To teach us not only animals that are kosher and worthy to put on the mizbeach, But even animals that are not worthy to put on the Mizbeach, for example, even a dog would be forbidden according to the Torah to castrate. So hatam nafkalan me'eretz. There they learned the dog from Eretz. Because again, you didn't have to say Eretz. So therefore, that comes to tell me anything in the land, meaning any type of animal. But here, from the fact that it says that it's echem, it's coming to include even the castration of human beings that are forbidden. Oh, so the Gemara's question then is, if you're telling me we have a pasuk in the Torah to teach us it's forbidden, how do they allow the guy to take this kosher ikarin, after all it's going to cause him to be sterile? Let's read that inside again. Four lines on the bottom. Atan yadir we learn in the Braita, minay lesirus ba'adam shu asur. Tamud lomar, ub'artsechem lo ta'asu. And the drasha is bachem lo ta'asu. But not only by the animals, but it's forbidden to do it by the people as well. The Rebbe Hanina. So comes the Gemara and says, ani mile hechadecha mechaven. Literally it means that it's only asur when one is intending to do so. Hacha me'atzmohu. But here it's happening by itself. Now, this doesn't mean that it's dependent on kabana or not, because here it's going to happen inevitably, which means even if the person does not have kabana when he's drinking this cup of kosher ikrin, even if it's in mitkavin, well, let's say you have rabbis like Rabbi Shimon that say in mitkavin is mutar, but we know that if something happens inevitably, so it's called the psikir esher. So even according to the Bishimon that says emet kaven is mutar, it is still forbidden. So we have to explain, according to the Ran, the way he explains this Gemara is, emet kaven means that he's not doing it directly. Which means, when do we say sirus is asur? That's that, when you actually go and castrate the actual organ itself. Here he's taking a potion, and the potion indirectly causes sirus, that already the Torah was not forbidding. So that's what the Gemara means over there. When is it forbidden? When he's mechaven, meaning when he actually does it to the evid itself, to the organ. However, here, lo mechaven pirush, that he's not doing it directly, it's happening through a external cause by taking the drink. Comes the Gemara and says, they're going to bring a proof to this. The Amar of Yohanan, because of Yohanan, taught, Harotzeh Shiyisares Tanegol. If a person wants to cause a chicken to become sterile, Yitol Karbalto Umistares. Just remove the crest of the chicken, of the bird, the rooster, and the rooster now will become sterile. Now, the assumption is that why is it permissible? Because you did it indirectly. You didn't actually go cut the organs of the rooster off. You cut the crest of it off, that's like the crown that it has on top of its head, and automatically it'll become sarus. So you see it's permissible. Gemara says no. Gemara says, V'ha'amar avasheh ramut rucha hu dinkitale. No, really by taking the crest off the rooster, that really doesn't cause impotence. It just takes away the arrogance of the rooster. Ramut ruha. And once already he loses that arrogance, so it seems his tava, his desire to procreate, also leaves him. So therefore, he won't have children, but he's not a saris. He's not sterile. So therefore, you have no proof from the case of the rooster that indirect sirus would be forbidden. On the contrary, there you didn't miss the rooster. Just by taking off the crest, so now you humbled it. So now it lost its arrogance, let's say. So therefore, so to speak, it's not interested now to do this anymore. So therefore, the Gemara is back to its question now. We have no proof to show that indirect is permissible. Then we go back to the assumption that even indirect Sirus would be forbidden. So the question is, how do we allow an El Mishnah, the guy to drink the kosher clean, let's say during the week? So the Gemara says, Ela Misaris. We're talking about somebody that was sterile already. Only that guy can take kosher clean, because he's Saris already. But you're right, a regular guy would be forbidden, because bottom line, this potion would cause him to be a Saris. Comes the Gemara and says, V'amar v'chayyab arabam rabbi Hanan, Hakol modim b'mehametz ahar mehametz shu hayav sh'ne'emar lo te'afe hametz lo ta'ase hametz. במסרס אחר מסרס שהוא חייב שנאמר ומעוך וחתות ונתוק וחרות אם על קרות חייב על נתוק לא כל שכן אלא להבין נותק אחר קורת שהוא חייב. This is all one statement, and the statement has an introduction. The introduction to the statement is that we have a machloket regarding a bechor of an animal, the firstborn of an animal, that let's say it has an excessive amount of blood in the animal itself. Now we know a bechor has kedusha to it. Now if it has an excessive amount of blood to it, the question is, if we're allowed to make a wound in the animal, meaning to let some blood out or not, what's it dependent on? It's dependent because you're really not allowed to make a blemish on things that are Kodesh. Some say it's permissible, and some say it's not. There already we have a Mahloket. I should point out that the Mahloket is only discussing where the animal has a blemish already, which means it's a Baal Mum already. So the question is, could you make an additional mum to an animal that's a baal mum already? See, everybody agrees, if it's without any blemishes, you can't go now blemish an animal of Kodesh. There's no machloket on that. The machloket is, could you do a mum achar mum? Could you do a blemish after a blemish? The animal already has the type of mum on it. Now you want to go put a second blemish on it. You might argue and say, well, what's the difference? You know, it has one blemish anyway, so it's pasul. So therefore, the second blemish, you're really not adding anything. Or do we say, no, you can't add extra blemishes to something that's Kodesh? There we have a machloket on that subject. But everybody agrees, and that's what the statement starts off. Hakol modim, even those rabbis that argue over there, agree in the case of mehametz achar mehametz. What is that talking about? Most of the menachot, of the meal offerings that were brought in the Beit HaMikdash, were not chametz. Even though they were brought from flour and water, however, one had to make sure that they did not rise. Except for a korban that they brought on Shavuot, which was called shteh lechem, which was actually loaves of bread, all, if not most of the menachot that were brought in the Beit HaMikdash were matzah. They did not rise. So now the Gemara has a question. Let's say the mincha became leavened. Okay? It rose, let's say. Is it permissible to continue the process? Meaning, let's say the guy that needed it, he waited too long, it became chametz. Now the next Kohen comes along and he wants to roll it out into dough. And then the third Kohen comes along and he puts it in the oven. So the question is, each one is adding to the chametz of the item. Is each one going to be hayav? Or do we say, listen, once it's chametz already, you can't make something more chametz? So that's what the Gemara starts with, b'mechametz achar mechametz. By making a mincha chametz, and continuing the process after it became chametz already. Shu hayav. And the statement clearly says, Hayav according to everybody, Shnei Emad, not Ta'afi Hametz. One Pasuk writes, you can't bake the Mincha when it's Hametz. But we have another Pasuk that says, Lo Ta'ase Hametz. And Lo Ta'ase Hametz teaches us that you can't do any of the processes of making bread. That means the guy that needed it is going to be Hayav, the guy that rolled it out is going to be Hayav, the guy that put it in the oven is going to be Hayav, even though each one is just continuing the Himutz process. So that's the first case. The second case that everybody agrees on is the Misares, Achar Misares Shu Hayav. That if somebody castrates somebody who's castrated already, that's Sirus, Achar Sirus, you're going to be Hayav as well. Question is, where did they learn that from? Shne'emar, they learned it from the Pasuk. Uma'uch v'chatut v'natuk v'charut. Now let's try to explain each one of these words. We're talking about over here the testicles of the animal, and for that matter we're talking about the testicles of a human being, as we learned earlier. Now ma'uch means if they were squeezed, the testicles, or chatut means they were crushed. Natuk means they were detached, and charut means they were cut. Now, anything like that to the testicles of the human being is going to be asur. So Gemara says, im al charut hayav, if they were actually cut, which means that means the testicle was actually removed. Al natuk lo chol sheken, natuk we explained as
detached,
right? Detached, but they're still there. Mm-hmm. So why does the Pasuk have to tell me a case of charut? Of course charut is going to be hayav. Charut is where they're totally cut off. Detached means they're severed a little. So the Gemara asks, again I say, im al charut hayav. If they're totally detached and severed, one is going to be hayav. Al natuk lo kol sheken, which means certainly again, im al charut hayav. Which is on karut one is going to be hayav, right? Rashi says koret. I read Rashi she'enu notkan degamri. Alright, so clear Rashi says you don't detach them totally. Ela hotchan, he just severs them v'teluyin bekis, but they're still hanging there. So kol sheken in a case where you notek, where you totally detach them. So why does the pasuk have to write both? Ela lehavin notek ahar koret shu hayav. It comes to tell me that even though a person, let's say, had them cut, but they were still there, then after that he went and pulled them out, so therefore he's a notek ahar koret. He makes an isur, he's hayav. So what do you see over here? The guy already was a saris after he cut them. However, when he does the next process of pulling them out, so that's a sirus achar sirus, and still the statement is telling us that he is indeed hayav. So we're back to the question: how could you tell me in our Mishnah that our Mishnah is talking about a saris, and therefore we let him take the question like clean? What are you talking about? So he's just making himself a saris again, and we just learned that if you do the process twice, he's going to be hayav. Now, even though you could, well, Gemara is going to give a different answer, obviously, but the question is a little hard to understand in the sense that in our case of the Mishnah, the guy, let's say, is a total saris. So when the guy is a total saris, so now you're taking this, this question like clean. So maybe I can tell you it's permissible. Where here, he still has the testicle there. So now you're doing an extra process by, totally removing it. So it could be that's adding to the, taking it a step further. In any event, the Gemara seems not to make this distinction. And the Gemara is going to answer as follows. Ela bezaken. You have to say that our Mishnah is talking about an old man that stopped having children. Now, what is this answer exactly? An old man who cannot have children. Why is an old man who stopped having children better than a case of a saris? Well, first of all, we only see here that you can't do sirus after sirus. However, a zakin is not a saris. A zakin, just because of his old age, he can't have children anymore. In that case, where somebody stopped having children, there's no gezerah that he cannot do another process. By a saris, who's a young man, right, who became sterile, to him he cannot do the second process over again. However, by a zaken, there's no gezerah. Furthermore, it can be understood because it's understood that, let's say, a young man who is able to have children, So in that case, the way that it's asur to have sinus ahar sinus. But in old men, where it's evident, when you reach the age where you cannot have children anyway, so therefore there is no restriction on. So our Mishnah that said you could take a kosher, a clean, was talking about an old man that cannot have children. Gemara says, wait, the Amar of Yohanan. Yohanan said, "Hen hen yachziruni lenaharotai." Yohanan was an old man. He became impotent, and then he took a certain type of potion that the Gemara Gittin tells us that cures impotence. And Rabbi Yohanan said, "I took it, and it brought me back to my virility. It brought me back to my youth." So, what do you see? Even a zaken is technically able to come back. So therefore, it should be asur even for a zaken to take the course shel ikrin. Gemara says, "Ela deisha." We're talking about a lady. Now, what is it to help us, a lady? Because one of the reasons why it's asur for a man to become a saris is, first of all, we have Umar Tzechem. We have that pasuk. Furthermore, a man is obligated in the mitzvah of Peru Urvu. Be fruitful and multiply. And therefore, to make himself a saris, he's now, he's now unable to fulfill this most important mitzvah ta'aseh. However, a lady is not obligated on the mitzvah of Peru Urvu. How do we know that? Because she tells us, when God told Adam and Rishon, Peru Urvu, he said, "Umil'u et ha'ares," and fill the land, "v'chivshuha," and conquer it. So we see, who's obligated to have Peru Urvu? Only on one that's the normal way for him to conquer. Who conquers? Men conquer. Men go out to war. Ladies don't go out to war. And therefore, since the lady is not chayevet on Peru Urvu and having children, so she has no problem to make herself a saris. So we go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah that said you could take a kosher clean, let's say, during the week, is only talking about an isha. Gemara says, wait. Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokah de'amar al shenehem u'omer. The Koyt of Yohanan that says that the law of Peru Urvu is actually said to both Adam and Hava, because it says, "By Barech Otam Elohim, Vayomer Lahem Peru Urvu." He learns that when it says Vayomer Lahem, that the command was actually said to both Adam and Hava. And therefore ladies are obligated on Peru Urvu. So what are you going to say? Naika Lememar. The Gemara answers, Bezekena. So we can say we're talking about an old lady. And since the old lady cannot have children, right? So therefore, you have to say also that there is no potion that can bring an old lady back to virility. Sarah Imenu was a miracle. Right, so in Sobchim Alanez, we have to rely on a miracle, and therefore we can say we're talking about a zekena iname be'akara. Or for that matter, we could be talking about a lady that is an akara, that she indeed is already sterile already. We have no isur of a sirus by a lady, and therefore if she's akara already, it would be permissible for her to take this kosher ikarin. So we go back to our Mishnah. How important is to read the Gemara, otherwise we have no understanding of our Mishnah. When the Mishnah said that on Shabbat it's forbidden to take kosher ikrin, but on a weekday it would be permissible, that's only talking about a lady who's an old lady that could stop having children, or an akara lady that cannot have children. But anybody else, meaning a man, whether he's sterile, whether he is an old man that cannot have children anymore, would be asur for him to take this potion, because either it would be sirus ahar sirus, the old man still can go back to his virility, and therefore would be forbidden in these cases. Now the Rishonim discuss the extent of these isurim. Is it deoraita? Is it rabbanan? Are these asmachtot? The Rishonim discuss exactly to what extent it's forbidden to do these items. Okay, ayen in the Rishonim for more information on the extent. Comes the new Mishnah and says, HaChoshesh b'shinav. If a person, let's say, has a toothache on Shabbat, lo yigma' bahen et ha'chometz. He should not sip vinegar. It seems in this Mishnah that vinegar was some type of cure for two things. So the Mishnah says it seems to be evident on Shabbat if he's sipping vinegar that he's doing it for medicinal purposes, and that would be asur, right? Aval metabelu kedarko. But if let's say he has bread and he wants to dip his bread in vinegar and eat the bread in his normal fashion, if he gets healed, then fine. Since he's doing it in a normal fashion. Ha'oshesh b'motnav. The person, let's say, has pain in his loins. Lo yasuch. He should not anoint himself. Bahen, them, the loins. Yayin v'chomet. It seems a mixture of wine and vinegar rubbed on the loins would cure them. Now, obviously, it looks like he's doing it for medicinal purposes, which would be asur on Shabbat. Aval sachu et hashemen. But he's allowed to anoint himself with regular oil. It seems that was a common practice where people would, rub themselves with regular oil. Therefore, it doesn't look like he's doing something for medicinal reasons. Velo shemen vered. However, he's not allowed to use what's called shemen vered, which let's say would be the oil that comes from the rose. Why not? Rashi tells us, Lefisha damav yekarim. First of all, this item was very expensive, the rose oil, the eno matsui. And it's really not so prevalent, hard to find. Umuhamil tad lerufua avid. And if you're using it, clearly you're doing it for medicinal purposes. However, the Gemara says, B'nei melachim, Mishnah says, princes, sachin shemet vered al makotehem. They're allowed to even place shemen vered on their wounds, sheken darchan lasuch behol, because they use this stuff even during the week regularly. So therefore, if you're a prince and that's the custom to use this expensive oil, so a prince is allowed to use this oil of the roses even on his makan Shabbat. Rabbi Shimon Omer Kol Yisrael b'nei melachim hem. Rabbi Shimon does not discriminate. He says once you find one class of Israel that's permissible to use the item, everybody becomes permissible to use the item. He's not saying that everybody is a prince. He means everybody has the status of princes in the sense that it would be permissible. Comes the Gemara and says, Rami le Ravacha Aricha. Rav Acha Aricha brought a contradiction. Now, who is Rav Acha Aricha? Literally means the tall one. Dehu Rav Acha Bar Papa. It's actually Rav Acha Bar Papa Le Rav Abhu. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, HaChoshesh B'Shinav, if a person has a toothache, Lo Yigmar Behem Et HaChometz. He should not sip vinegar. The Memra the HaChometz Ma'aleh L'Shinayim. This means to say that vinegar is beneficial to the teeth. Vaketiv, we have a pasuk in Mishle, kachometz leshinayim uchashan la'enayim. Shlomo HaMelech says in a negative way, it's like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, implying that vinegar is detrimental to the teeth. Gemara says, lakashya ha bekiyuha deperi ha behala. The bad stuff to the teeth is kiyua de peri. That's where you have, let's say, a grape that did not ripe yet, and it has a very, very sour juice from it. That sour juice that comes from the unripened grape, that's what Shlomo HaMelech was talking about. That vinegar is bad for the teeth. Habechala, Amishnah's talking about regular vinegar, which is beneficial. Or we can give another answer. Habechala. Both are talking about vinegar. Ha di'ika maka, ha deleka maka. And it depends if you have a wound in your gums or not. Ika maka, if you have gum problems, maseh, then the vinegar is actually a healing. Leka maka. However, if you don't have a gum problems, merpeh, then already it softens the gums and will cause the teeth to fall out. And therefore, when Shlomo HaMelech was saying, Kechometz Lashinayim is still about a healthy guy that has no problems with his teeth and takes vinegar, then already it's going to be detrimental. However, how much that's talking about when the guy's got an ailment. Therefore, the vinegar is actually therapeutic. Comes the Gemara, again, this word marfeh means to soften. It softens the gums. Lo yigmar bahem et hachometz. Right? We said one should not sip the vinegar. Ba'atanya, the Mishnah, we have a braita that says, Lo yigmar upolet. The Braita said, no, the only thing that's forbidden on Shabbat is to sip it and then spit it out. Because then it's clear you're doing it for medicinal. Aval migameya uboneya. But if you want to sip and then swallow, the Braita says that it is permissible. Amar Abaye, so Abaye says, you're right. Ki tenan name matnitin megameya uponetenan. Yeah, that's what our Mishnah meant. It meant that it's only forbidden to sip and then spit out. However, if you sip and swallow, it indeed will be permissible. So comes the Gemara and says, Rava Amar, that was Abaye's answer. Rava Amar, afilu tema megameya uboneya. I can tell you how Mishnah could be read as we understood it. It's forbidden to sip and swallow the vinegar. Oh, why should it be forbidden? Kan lifnei tibul, kan me'achar tibul. Which means it depends when you did it. Before the meal or after the meal. Lifnei tibul was another way of saying before the meal. Because since during their meals they used to dip. That was the way they used to eat. A lot of the foods they would dip in condiments and eat them. So they would call the meal, let's say, a tibul. So if you do it before the meal, it's permissible. But if you do it after the meal, it's forbidden. Logic being, before the meal, when you sip on the vinegar, people say, he's eating. That's the way they eat. They would all eat these condiments and things like that. And therefore, nobody would think he's doing anything strange. But after the meal is over, now he takes some vinegar in his mouth and swallows it. Now, it's not the custom after the meal to start drinking the vinegar. And therefore, they're going to suspect him for taking medicine, and therefore it would be forbidden. Let's actually read this in Nashi inside. Lefne tibul, lefne achila mutar. Before the meal, it's permissible to sip and swallow. Shedarkan haya litbol behomets bechol yom. That was the custom. They used to eat the vinegar. That's what he's doing. He's eating the vinegar. Instead of dipping in the vinegar, he's eating it. Everybody knows he ate already. And he ate all the condiments he wants already. So it will be forbidden. So comes according to this, we have so far two answers to explain our Mishnah. Either our Mishnah means it's only forbidden if you're going to sip and then spit out. Because then it's evident. But sipping and swallowing permissible. Rava comes along and says, even sipping and swallowing could be forbidden. When? When you do it after the meal. Before the meal would be permissible. Comes the Gemara and says, V'nema, wait, Rava. V'nema medilifnei tibul shareh. If you're telling me it's permissible before the meal, le'achar tibul nameh shareh. You have to say that after the meal it's also going to be permissible. The Gemara is going to tell us that you can't say something is forbidden at one point on Shabbat and then permissible at another point on Shabbat. You can't do that. If it's permissible at one point in the day, it's got to be permissible the whole day. Why? The Shama'ina lil Rava, because Rava himself that gave this answer, he holds of a principle called the Itle Ho'il. He holds the concept of ho'il. Now, literally, the word ho'il means since. Now, what's the principle? The Amar Rava leka midi de b'Shabbat shareh. There is nothing that is permissible on Shabbat ubiyom kippurim asur. That is going to be forbidden on Yom Kippur. Meaning, if it's permissible on Shabbat, it's going to be permissible on Kippur. Ho'il. What's the logic? Since. Since the b'Shabbat shareh. What was he actually talking about? He was talking about a specific case. That case actually is brought down by Rashi, and we'll read it inside together. Venema, medelifte tibul shari. De'en lecha she'asur lemiksata Shabbat. Because according to Rava, something cannot be forbidden for part of the Shabbat, umutar lemiksato. And then be permissible for the rest. Can't be asur and then mutar in the same Shabbat. Why? That Shama'ina l'Rabba b'perek yom tov masikat betzah, de'amar gabe tevila. He was discussing a case of immersion in a mikveh. He said the concept of ho'il b'chiyai gavet, d'ktani atam, el matbirim kerim b'Shabbat. We know you're not allowed to dip vessels into a mikveh on Shabbat. Not everybody agrees. The Adam tovel. But a human being is allowed to dip in the mikveh on Shabbat. We continue Rashi, Vamininan, Kelim Maitamalo. What's the reason why vessels cannot? Amar Rava, Mipnishin Ekim Taken Keli. Because it looks like you're fixing the vessel. See, by now dipping the vessel becomes usable. So it's like you fixed it. It's like you're fixing on Shabbat. So the Gemara says about Adam, Nir'ekemekar. But a human being, when he goes into the mikveh, even though he might, let's say, purify himself, but it looks like he's just cooling himself off. So therefore, since you can explain it, where it doesn't look like, you know, you're doing something to remove the tumah off the guy, yeah, he's cooling himself off. Why, you can't cool yourself off on Shabbat in cold water? Of course you can. So therefore, Rava says it's permissible. Now, Vamninan, Tinach b'Shabbat v'shar yareh haitza. Right, that's good for Shabbat, where bathing in cold water is permissible. So you can answer it up and say, hey, he's taking a bath. However, b'yom kippurim da'asur haitza, but we know on Kippur, when you're not allowed to bathe, and everybody knows the only reason why you can go into a mikveh on Kippur is in order to purify himself. And you can't tell me, I don't say he's bathing. What do you mean? Can't bathe on Kippur. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, right? We should make a gezerah that why it should be a suit to go to the mikveh on Kippur, because it looks like you are mitaken. Amar Abba, so that's where Abba came along and said, no. If it's permissible on Shabbat, it's permissible on Kippur. And there's nothing that's permissible on Shabbat and is asur on Kippur based on the principle of Ho'il. What's that? Since. So therefore, what do you see from Rava? We want to say the same thing over here. Not from one day to another day, but now let's use the principle to the day itself. Since you find on Shabbat, exactly, that it's permissible to take this vinegar and sip the vinegar before the meal, once already you see permissible before the meal, so it should be permissible based on the principle of the ho'il to take the vinegar after the meal. Now Rava, you were the one that said that answer before the meal and after the meal. How did you say that? You hold the principle of ho'il. So that's a contradiction on Rava himself. Comes the Gemara and says, Hadar de Rava mehach. Rava retracted from his answer. Meaning, he took back that answer of before the meal and after the meal. He agrees with Abaye. The only time it's going to be as soon as to sip and spit out. But sip and swallow will be permissible whether it's before the meal or whether it's after the meal. You're right, he retracted. I mean, once he said the principle of ho'il, then he took back his statement regarding vinegar. So the Gemara says, Mimai dimehach hadarbe. Who told you he retracted from his opinion by the vinegar on Shabbat? Dilma mehahi hadarbe. Maybe he retracted from his principle of ho'il. Means he made two statements. Who told you he retracted from the vinegar statement? Maybe he retracted from the oil statement. So Gemara says, "That's not kada." No, I wouldn't think that. Why? The Tanya, because we have a clear braita. Kol hibe tevilot tovlim kedarkan ben b'tishah be'av ben b'yom kippurim. But a clear braita that says anybody that's obligated to go to the mikveh, that what? He's able to go to the mikveh, whether it's Tisha B'Av or whether it's on Kippur. That must be because you're using the principle of Ho'il. So therefore, since we have a clear Braita, so therefore that substantiates Rava's opinion, so we would assume that Rava is not retracting from his opinion of Ho'il. It should be pointed out that this does not apply today. And today, even let's say a lady who had time to go to the mikveh, we do not allow them to go, not on Tisha B'Av, and not on Kippur. This was only talking about in the times of the Gemara. In any event, comes that we have one answer to our Mishnah. The Mishnah that said you're allowed to sip vinegar and on Shabbat, oh, you're not allowed to sip the vinegar, it's still because she was sipping it and spitting it out. Like Abaye's answer, and Rava will concur to that. However, to sip and swallow would be permissible. The sipping and swallowing is considered the normal way of eating the vinegar as well. Comes the Gemara and continues. Amar Rab Abba Bar Zavda. Amar Rav. Halakha Kerabi Shimon. Rav said, Halakha follows the Bishimon. What did the Bishimon say? Kol b'nei Yisrael b'nei Melachim. All the Jewish people are considered princes, meaning we don't differentiate between one class and another class, and therefore everybody would be permissible to use Shemin Vered on their makot on Shabbat. Gemara says, Lememra, you mean to tell me derav k'rabbi Shimon svirale? You mean to tell me that in the laws of Shabbat, Rav goes with Rabbi Shimon and is lenient? Which means it seems that the Gemara had a tradition over here that if Rav is going to hold like Rabbi Shimon, that means he's going to take him, you know, throughout the laws of Shabbat, nekuda. So the Gemara says, wait, can't say that. Why can't you say that? So the Gemara says, we have another statement of Rav that says, "Hay misuch raya tinezaita." What is this item? Person has a barrel and he has a spigot in the barrel, right, in order to draw the liquid out. But the spigot, let's say, is not perfectly in the hole, so you're worried about it dripping. So they would take, let's say, a cloth, and they would stuff it in between the holes, you know, the hole to fill up the gap, in order that the wine does not leak out of the sides. Okay? So that's called Mesichuta de Nezaita. Let's read Rashi on the bottom. Beged, right, a garment, Korchin be barzah habit shel heretz. They attach it to the spigot of a barrel of heretz, b'pnei she'en hanekev shaveh. Because the hole is not perfect, and therefore they need to fill in the gaps. So what did Rav say on this? Asula duke biyoma taba. It is forbidden to place this on the barrel on Yom Tov. Why? So there's one of two reasons why it can be asud. One reason is because what's going to happen to this this cloth? It's going to get drenched with wine. And then what's going to happen? You're going to squeeze it. And that's going to be a problem of sechita, which is now you're going to squeeze, which is a toldah of the melacha of dash. So therefore, that is forbidden. Or you could say the isud is that when you squeeze the wine out of the garment, so that's the isud of melaben, of whitening. Because now that you squeeze some of the wine out, it's melabin. It causes it to become whiter than it was. In any event, whether it's isud of melabin or isud of dash, it's a machloket. In this case, everybody agrees the problem is sohet, squeezing. What's the problem of squeezing? Is squeezing a problem of dash, of threshing, a tolah, or is it a tolah of melabin? In any event, Rav said it's forbidden. Now, in this case, does the guy intend to squeeze the wine out of the beged? Of course not. He just wants to clog up the hole. So this would be a davar she'en mitkaven. Now we know, according to Rabbi Shimon, a davar she'en mitkaven is mutar on Yom Tov as well as Shabbat. And Rav is telling you over here, asur. So you see what? Rav does not hold like Rabbi Shimon in the laws of Shabbat. As a matter of fact, Rav is machmir. So how could you tell me before, hey, Rav goes with Rabbi Shimon on Shabbat, he lets you use the Shem Inverid, Kovenei Seben Menachim, he doesn't take Rabbi Shimon and the leniencies of Shabbat. The fact is, he doesn't let you put the beged in the, around the spigot. Gemara says, no. Habe'ahi afil Rabbi Shimon modeh. Even in that case, Rabbi Shimon will agree. Even Rabbi Shimon that says Davar Shemit Kavin is mutar, but if it's going to happen inevitably, if it's an automatic, even Rabbi Shimon says it's forbidden. In this case, when you put the garment by the spigot, automatically you're going to come to squeeze the garment, because the garment is going to become drenched. Rabbi Shimon agrees that that is forbidden. So therefore, when Rav said Asur, he is concurring with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. So you have no problem. He can hold like Rabbi Shimon, like leniency of Al Mishnah. And in that case, even Rabbi Shimon of the spigot is Mahmir. So Rav is fine. Gemara says, no, not so fast. Ba'amar Rav Chaya Bar Asher. Amar Rav. We have another statement of Rav that says, Halakha Kirbi Yehuda. Halakha follows Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda holds in Masechet Shabbat, Davar She'en Mitkaven Asur. Which is, even if it's not inevitable, even if it's not a psik nesheh, Rabbi Yehuda says what? Even if you didn't have kavanah for the melacha, asur. So clearly we see that Rav is actually stringent in the laws of Shabbat.
Now, Verav Hanan bar Ame Amar Shmuel halakha ke Rabbi Shimon. Fine.
But bottom line, you see, Rav himself took the stringent opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So how could you tell me he's following the lenient opinion of Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah? Again, not that there's any connection between the law of Davar She'en Mitkaven and the law of soaking your Makkah with Shemin Vered. It's just that you see that Rav did not take Rabbi Shimon's opinion in Masechet Shabbat. Because if he took his opinion, he should have held by him like by Davar She'en Mitkaven also being Mutar. From the fact that you see Rav does not go with Rabbi Shimon's leniency in Masechet Shabbat, as seen in this case over here where he took Rabbi Yehuda Lachmir. So how can he tell me that he takes Rabbi Shimon over here Lachmir? Comes again and says,
now we have this statement, Rav Hiya bar Asher, in the name of Rav, right? He said that Lachazak Rabbi Yehuda, and the second rabbi is Rav Hanan bar Ameh in the name of Shmuel. That's one way of learning the statement. Rav Hiya bar Abin Matni La Belo Gabre. Rav Hiya bar Abin had the same statement just without the first rabbis, meaning he just had it straight. Rav Amar Alakha Rabbi Yehuda, Ushmuel Amar Alakha Rabbi Shimon. He just didn't have Rav Hiya bar Asher Amar. He just had Rav and Shmuel. But bottom line, everybody's saying over there, Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda. El Amar Rava Ani Va'ari Shebahabura. So Rava says, me and the lion in the group, they would call the great rabbi of the group the lion of the group, Targimina, we'll interpret what this means. Umar, who's the lion of the group? Rav Hiya bar Abin. Halakha ke Rabbi Shimon ve'lav mita'ameh. When Rav said, halakha is like Rabbi Shimon and our Mishnah that allows you to put the Shemin Vered on your Makkah, he meant, halakha is like Rabbi Shimon, meaning I agree that it's permissible, but not because of his reason. Because I have a different reason. So the Gemara says, "My halacha can be shemon velav mitame." What does that mean? Ile ma halacha can be shemon de shari. If it means to say that halacha follows the mishnah that it's permissible to put the shemon vered velav mitame, but not for his reasoning. The ile mishnah is about maseh, because the mishnah holds the reason that he holds shemon vered actually heals, and the hadush of the mishnah is what that even though it heals, it's permissible. Why? Because we don't discriminate between classes. Rav sabar lo maseh, and the reason why Rav will tell you it's permissible is because he holds it doesn't do anything. If that, maybe that's what they meant to say. Halakha can be shemon, meaning halakha follows the mishnah that it's permissible. You know why? Because it doesn't work. Meaning I like what the mishnah held that it works and it's still permissible. Rav will say, I agree with Rabbi Shimon, but I don't agree with his logic. You know why I say it's permissible? Because Shem and Vered don't do anything for the Makkah. Gemara says, no, that can't be. That can't be. The Savar Rav lo maseh. Can Rav say that the Shem and Vered doesn't actually cure? The Amidiktani b'nei melachim sachin al gabe makoteim Shem and Vered michlal le maseh. Meaning, Tanakama wrote that the b'nei melachim, the princes, they take Shemin Vered and they rub it on their wounds. That assumes that everybody holds it works, which means even the Tanakama, right? Not only Bishwan, Tanakama even said a fact that what? Princes do rub it on their wounds to heal it. So it's not logical for us to say that Rav is going to argue now on the properties of Shemin Vered. So now we're back to the question. If Rav agrees that it heals, yeah? So now, and we know that Rav is usually stringent in the laws of Shabbat against Rabbi Shimon. So what did he mean when he said, halakha ke Rabbi Shimon? So remember, not that he's following Rabbi Shimon. He agrees that halakha is like Rabbi Shimon, but not like his reasoning. Oh, so what does that mean? So the Gemara says, "Ela halakha ke Rabbi Shimon deshare." Yes, halakha is Rabbi Shimon that's permissible. Velav mitame, why? But not from his reading. Either Rabbi Shimon sabar af agav de lo shchiyach shari. Right, Rabbi Shimon holds no matter where you're using this item, even if you're in a place where it's not so prevalent to have shem inverted, right, and it's not so commonly used. And therefore you might say, oh, it's clear that this guy's spending all this money for Shemin Vered, he's definitely using it for a Makkah. The Mishnah says it doesn't matter. Since bottom line, there's a class of Israel that uses Shemin Vered regularly, finish. Once it's mutar for one class, it's permissible for another class, even in a place where it's not
prevalently used. That's why she says, I quote, "Afagav de los chiyach, shemen vere b'mkomo shel ze, hasach mene v'damav yekarim, v'akol yot'im she'eno sakoy l'refu'ah." Shari. Why? Decho yisei mene menachimim. Ah, now go back to the Gemara. The Rav Sava, Rav says no. Ish chiyach in. If it's prevalent that people use shemen vere in the place where this guy comes from, then the guy will be even able to use it on his makkah. The lo shchiyach. No, but if it's not prevalent, no. Ubatra de Rav shchiyach mishcha de varda. And in Rav's place, it happened to be prevalent and common to you. So Rav said mutar, but really he's mahmir, which means he actually agrees to the opinion of Tanakama, meaning. Just like Tanakama said, it is forbidden to use Shemen Vered. He's explaining. When did Tanakama say it's forbidden to use Shemen Vered? In a place where it's not commonly used. Then Tanakama is going to forbid it because it's clearly using it for medicine. But Tanakama will be lenient in a place that people use it. And even if you're not a Ben Melech, people use Shemen Vered in a place, they spend the money, so you could use it also on Shabbat, even for Refuah, because it's not evident. Whereas Rabbi Shimon was very lenient. Rabbi Shimon came along and said, you can use it, whether it's prevalent, whether it's not prevalent. Since B'nai Menachim use it, anybody can use it. So Rav said, you know, halakha can Rabbi Shimon, but not according to his reasoning. Where Rabbi Shimon was lenient across the board, I'm only lenient in a place where they commonly use it. And it happens to be in Rav's place, they commonly use it, therefore it would be permissible. Hadran ha'alach, Shimona Shiratzim. And now we move, it's after the 15th perek of Masechet Shabbat. And we talk about tying and untying knots, which was the melachot of kosher and matir. Comes the Mishnah and says, "Ve'elu kesherim shehayavim aleihem." The following knots, if one knots them on Shabbat, one is going to be hayav. Kesher gamalim, the camel's knot, the kesher asapanim, and the sailor's knot. We will see what these knots are in the Gemara. Ushem shehu hayav al kishuran, just like he's hayav if he makes the knot, kachu hayav al heteran. So too he's going to be hayav if he undoes the knot. Again, as we learned, kosher umatir. Now where did they have untying in the Mishkan? So we learned, first of all, Rashi tells us, Elu kesharin, hamenuim ba'avot melachot dektani, ha-kosher ba-matir, kesher shel kayama. Now how do we know that the only type of knot that's going to be hayav is a permanent knot, a knot that's planning on staying there? Sheno matiro le'olam. Actually, according to Rashid, has to stay there le'olam, forever, to be hayav. So he says, because let's say when they were making the curtains in the Mishkan, if a string broke, so they would knot it. Now that knot, the intention was to keep it there forever. They weren't untying the knots of the curtains of the Mishkan. So that from the Mishkan you learn that the permanency of the knot makes it a knot that's subject to hayuv. Now, where do we see that Chayav for untying? Where did they untie in the Mishkan? So if you remember, we learned early on Daf Ayin Dalid that when they used to trap the Chilazon fish, they used to have nets. Now sometimes they needed to adjust the size of the nets. So how would they adjust it? They would untie the knots of the net, adjust it, and then retie it. So therefore you see that there was untying as well in the Mishkan. Now you have to say there was kosher and there was matir. Good. Comes again, Mishnah and says, Rabbi Meir Omer, kol kesher shviyachol latiro b'achat miyadav, any knot that you can undo with one hand, en hayavim alav. Which means he holds that such a knot, if you can take out with one hand, it's not considered a tight knot, and therefore such knots are not usually made for the duration. Then it can't stay. If you can undo it with one hand, it's really not considered a knot that you're going to be hayav on. So let's just review the points of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said what? The knots that you hayav on according to Rashi is what? Permanent knots. What is permanent? Le'olam. Mishnah gave two examples. Kesher gamalim, the camel's knot, and the sailor's knot. Now the Gemara explains. My kesher gamalim, the kesher asapanim. What are these items? The camel's knot and the sailor's knot. Now, let me just give you an introduction so you understand what the Gemara is going to say. In a camel, they used to place a little ring in its nose. The ring was made, let's say, out of a string or a piece of leather. They would stick it in the nose of the camel and they would tie a knot to it. Little ring. Now, in that ring, they would stick a larger rope through it, and they would tie it, and that leash, they would pull the camel with it, or they would, let's say, tie it to the pole in order to keep the camel protected. So there's actually two knots over here. There's the knot of the ring, and there's the knot of the string that they place in that ring. Now, let's just analyze it ourselves. The knot that's in the ring would be a permanent knot. That ring you leave there. You don't take that knot out of it. You leave it there. The rope that you stick through that ring, that's not permanent because you tie it and then you untie it. Okay? The same thing was done by boats. In the front of the boat, they would place, let's say, a ring. Okay? That would stay there. They would knot it. They would place a rope through it. When they get to the dock, they would tie it to the dock. So now the Gemara is going to ask, when you told me the camel's not, and you told me the sailors are, the boat's not, which one are you referring to? Well, now that we have this introduction, we know which one that we're referring to, but the Gemara is going to speak it out. My question, Gemara, the question of Sapanim, what is the camel's not and the boat not? If you're talking about the knot that you do in the ring, which not the ring itself, the rope that you stick in the ring, and that you knot that rope, v'ketra dekatre be'istrida, and the rope that you stick again in the ring on the front of the boat, if you're talking about that, ha'kesh she'enu shel kayamahu. What do you mean? Those ropes are not permanent, because you're constantly tying and untying them. Ela ketra dezemama gufe. It's talking about the actual ring itself that you knotted in the nose of the camel. And the ring in front of the boat itself, that stays. And therefore it's hayat. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir taught, kon any knot that is can be taken out by one hand is not a permanent knot. What about a bow according to Rabbi Meir? Well, Ta'amed Rabbi Meir Mishub Diyakol Atiro Bahat Miyadahu. The reason of Rabbi Meir why he says it's permissible is because why? You can undo it with one hand. Ve'anam Yakol Atiro. And a bow also, you can take it apart with one hand. Or Dilma Ta'amad Rabbi Meir Mishub Diyakol Mahadek. Or maybe the reason he said is because if you can take it out with one hand, it's not permanent because it's not a tight knot. However, Ve'anam Mahadek, a bow you're able to make tight where it stays permanent. So we don't know the reason of Rabbi Meir. And based on the reason of Rabbi Meir, it's going to affect the opinion of a bow. Gemara says, Tiku. That you have to wait for Eliyahu Navi. Comes the next Mishnah and says, Yesh lecha kisharim, she'en chayavim alehem. There's certain types of knots that you're not going to be chayav on them. Kekeshir agamalim, like the keshir of the camels. Ukeshir hasapanim, and like the bow of the, like the knot of the sailor. Now, obviously, this is going to be talking about not the ring, but it's talking about the rope that you put in the ring, right? So that's not going to be hayav, implying, but it still be asur midrabanan, because true, you don't leave forever. It's not le'olam, but there is a certain permanency to it, and she later will tell us what the shi'ur would be. So therefore the Mishnah is going to tell us this would be not hayav, but let's say asur midrabanan. Now, kosheret isha mafteya haluka. A lady is allowed to tie, and this sounds like it's permissible, kosheret. She could tie on Shabbat the mafteya haluka, the opening of her cloak. And the ladies used to wear a certain cloak that was open in the front, and they used to take the right side of it and tie it to the left side, and the left side of it tie it to the right side. It's like a shawl. They used to tie it over the opposite shoulder. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why this would be permissible to see in the Gemara is because it's not permanent at all, which means she takes it apart, you know, the same day even. Right. Therefore, it would be permissible. Now, furthermore, the chotei sabaka, she could tie the strings of her hat, the shel, piskiya. Okay? Piskiya is a type of belt, a girdle. v'netzuot min al, or let's say the straps of a shoe or a sandal, a sandal, v'nodot yayin v'shemen, you had leather flasks of wine or oil, they used to make a knot on the top of it, v'kidera shel basar, even a pot of meat, sometimes used to cover it with a cloth and make a knot, v'b'ni'ezer omer, even allowed to make a knot in front of a animal so it doesn't go out. Meaning, you have an animal in a corral. You don't want it to escape. So they would take a string, a rope, and they would put it horizontally across, and they would tie it to a bar. So that would be, according to the Bnei Ezer Yaakov, permissible on Shabbat. Now the Gemara analyzes this Mishnah. Haguf Akasha. The implications of this Mishnah are contradictory. Amar, you said, Yesh kosh kesharin she'en hayavim alehem. You told me that there's certain knots that are not hayav, kekesher agamarim ukesher asaparim, like those knots of the camels and the boats. Chiyuvah udeleka, right, implying that you're not hayav. Ha isura ika, but it sounds like you're not hayav, but it's going to be at least isur midrabanan. Vadar tani, and then you tell me kosheret isha. Miftaya haluka afilu katayla, and then when you give me an example, you tell me that the lady is permissible to tie the, let's say, her cloak. Again, it sounds contradictory because you told me there are certain. When you read the Mishnah like this, you understand it better. Read the Mishnah like this: there are certain types of knots that you're not going to be hayav on, like the camels and the. And the boat that we mentioned in the last Mishnah that you're hayav on, there are certain that you're not going to be hayav on. Implying what? That these knots that we're going to discuss, they're going to be asur. And then the next line of the Mishnah, when it's giving us an example, it says, the lady is permissible to tie the knots of her cloak. What do you mean? Make up your mind. Is it asur midrabanan or is it permissible? The implications seem contradictory. So the Gemara says, "Haki kamar yesh kesharim she'en chayavim alehem kesher agamarim ukesher asafanim." Yes, there are certain knots that are not going to be chayav like the knots we mentioned in the first Mishnah, like the knots of the camel and the knots of the boats. Umaynihu, and what are those knots that are not going to be chayav but are going to be asur? Kitra de katre bezemama. It's going to be the rope that you stick in the ring, and the rope that you stick in the ring of the boat. Add that into our Mishnah. So our Mishnah is giving you a first classification. Mishnah 1 gave us the chiyuv deoraita. That's the actual ring in the camel's nose and the ring on the boat. Why? Because you leave it there le'olam. The second Mishnah said, and there's certain knots that you're not going to be hayav, like the first ones mentioned in the Mishnah. But what? You're going to be Isud Rabbanan. And what are those? The ropes that you stick in the ring of the camel and the boat. Why? Rashi tells us, Tap Rashi, very important. The ropes that you stick in the ring. You cannot tie it there. Why? Because sometimes you leave it there for a week or two. So that she's giving us the second subdivision over here. He's telling us a knot that you make for at least a week. That's not le'olam. That would be asur midrabanan. Okay? Now, back to the Gemara. Chiyuvah udeleka ha'esuraika. Right, there's no chiyuv on these knots, but it'll be asur midrabanan. Ve'yesh shemutarim lechetachila. And there's some knots that are permissible. Like a ta'ina, mind you, what are they? Kosheret miftaya haluka. That case over there where she doesn't leave it for a week, she ties a cloak every day, she takes it apart. Therefore it's permissible. So that she very clearly gives us the three levels of knots. There's le'olam, that's deoraita. There's a week, that's the rabbanan. And then there's less than a week, which miftaya haluka is mutar. Like a ta'ina, I should point out, that is not the opinion of the Rif and Harambam, how to learn. They throw in a different factor and it has to be mentioned. Rashi's only learning duration. He doesn't discuss to us the style of the knot. Whereas the other Yishonim throw in an extra factor over here. They throw in not only permanency, but they discuss the craftsmanship of a knot. they discuss a knot that's called Kesher Uman, a knot that only, let's say, it takes equipment to make it, or a specialty knot of Uman, and then you have Kesher She'eno Shel Uman. Right? Now they throw that into the mix. How? Harambam Shitaz as follows. That's the way Shulchan Aruch actually rules the knots as well. To be Hayav, you have to have two things. It's got to be Kesher Uman, that's a knot of a craftsman, and it has to be permanent. Right? If you have one of the two, either Uman or Kiyum, it's going to be Isur Midrabanan. If you have none of the two, that's going to be permissible. And that's the case of Mefteh Hashem Halukah. It's a very important mahloket, whereas that she doesn't discuss the style of the knot. He discusses the time and the length, the duration. The other Yishurim do throw in the fact if it's a Keshen or not. What would a Keshen Uman be? So the way that the Yishurim explain it is a tight knot. I mean, the tightness of the knot classifies it as a Keshen Shel Uman.